irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and hope you're staying dry out there wherever in the world you might be. And thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I actually have an extraordinary gentleman here with me who's going to be talking about a very interesting subject, which is what is the right job for you versus the right now job? Dan Negroni and I met a couple of weeks ago when I had the pleasure of hearing him speak. He's the founder and CEO of Launchbox and leverages his bold, authentic, no-nonsense approach and interactive style to challenge your employees and empower them to deliver immediate business results. Offering the solution to today's critical cross-generational issues, Dan successfully bridges the gap between managers and their millennial workforce to increase employee engagement, productivity, and profits. Dan delivers proactive, inspiring keynote presentations at all types of leadership, trade association conferences, and millennial-related events. With a successful 20-plus year career as a CEO, attorney, and senior sales and marketing executive, Dan's keynotes, workshops, and coaching sessions are proven to reinvigorate businesses and people on the spot. Dan is an active philanthropist serving as a board member and development chair to support the efforts of various charities. He resides in Del Mar, California with his wife of 25 years and the youngest of his three children. He's an avid health and fitness nut, running, biking, swimming, and doing anything else he can to fight off looking his age, which I find funny and awesome, Dan. And Dan is also the author of Chasing Relevance, 6 Steps to Understand, Engage, and Maximize Next Generation Leaders in the Workplace, which is now available everywhere. So Dan, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, you guys, for our listeners, I have to tell you, Dan was so dynamic and engaging. It's rare. I go to a lot of conferences myself, and I've had the privilege of hearing some extraordinary speakers. And immediately when I heard Dan's topic, at the time he was doing a session on millennials and how to engage them in the workplace, what really struck a chord with me, Dan, is that you and I even chatted about this. You taught me some things about millennials, and I manage my own millennials in the workplace, and I realized that I was seeing people through a filter, the millennials that I work with and the millennials that I recruit and place in jobs. And so you got my attention. When I realized that you were teaching me something I didn't know, I said, oh my gosh, we have to figure out a way to have you on the show. And it just happened that I had a cancellation. So I'm so delighted that our listeners get to hear your insights today and hear a little bit about you. So how did you get into this industry, Dan?
Yeah, so by accident or by purpose. I don't know which one you want to take, but I think both are true. I think by purpose is that, since I'm a little boy, I've always been trying to help people be better and help myself be better. And knowing that there was a better way that was filled with honesty and boldness and making it about others, and have been the consummate coach to myself and others for years and years and years. And by accident is about after a very successful career as an attorney and as a businessman and a CEO and startups in both technology and in regular brick and mortar businesses and buying and selling a lot of businesses, I just came to the conclusion that I wanted to make an impact by allowing young people to really figure out what was the dot inside and not all those dots that confuse them that they're attracted to, all those shiny dots, but what was the dot inside that allowed them to figure out what shiny dot they wanted to go after and how to create impact for their own lives and for everyone else around them. And so we just made it up and made up a business of how to train millennials to be their best selves and how to teach the rest of the generations. And when I say made up, I mean we did 3 years of research and wrote a book, but we did make up and trained about 5,000 millennials over those 3 years to figure out what was the key to success to help them be their best and help workplaces succeed with millennials as consumers and as employees.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant. I have to say, when you first brought up the dot thing in your speaking engagement, I was thinking to myself, I think that was one of the very first points you brought up in your talk. I'm like, where is this guy going with the dot thing? But it actually wound up being extremely relevant and very poignant. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what the dot is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so interesting. I got to give credit where credit's due. I work with an amazing acting and speaking coach, so I'm glad that you liked our speech, and he would like it too. He's the head of the acting department at UCSD and a dear, dear friend. But really what he works on with me is what's my why, like Simon Sinek is, and what's my purpose, and why is it so critical to me to get this right for millennials? And so one of the things we work on, just to see behind the scenes, is to really figure out what would make an emotional connection with the audience. And really, for me, as a young person, I really grew up in kind of a tough family with tough role models. And I was searching to figure out what inside could take me out of that background into success and helping others, and what should I attract to. And so I share with the audience much about how to do that. And really, what we liken the dots today is there's so many things going on in the world, and mind share and mindset and all those things that you attract to are very fleeting for millennials in the soundbite world, the world where, you know, we just say one thing and it kind of takes off, and we have 2 minutes here or 2 minutes there, and they're so attracted by so many different dots. And what we started to say is, what if we could teach people how to really figure out what not to attract to? And so that is about becoming a mentor from the inside out. And the real development behind that is what we teach here is how to become your own best mentor or own best coach. And then you will attract great mentors instead of going through life like, hey, I want to find this mentor. And when they find me, if you're a young person, then they will take me under their wing. They'll see how special I am and they'll help me. Well, we think it's the inverse. If we can help young people figure out who they are, they will then attract more to the people that they need to figure out what's in store for them. And so I don't know if that's a little bit long of a path, but that's really the story, is how do we figure out who we are from within?
I love that. You know, it's so funny you brought that up, because in retrospect, I had never thought about my own personal journey or path. And I've said it on the show and I'll say it again. I was a terror. I was a horrible human being from about the ages of 16 to maybe 22. And until I started doing, thank God I had, you know, somebody who introduced me to a program of reflection and self-development, probably something along the lines of what you do, is until that moment, I didn't know who I was, and I was always looking outward for happiness. But the moment I took that first step down that path, down that road of introspection and what does happiness look like for me, I now am grateful that I have, you know, 20 amazing coaches, spiritual, business, speaking, otherwise, you know, all who just naturally are attracted to you like a moth to the flame. And what a wonderful concept that you just came up with. Is you're right. It's, you vibrate, I think, at a certain frequency. And if you're somebody who's already looking for more and, you know, realizing what it is you have to offer the world, I think that's naturally going to resonate and draw the right mentors to you, rather than just sitting around and hoping that one day a great mentor will fall into your lap. That's wonderful advice.
Yeah, it's about taking responsibility for your own actions. So I'll ask you, Jennifer, because I love that assessment, is what at 22 was the awakening that allowed you to figure out, hey, I need to learn a little bit more about myself if I want to figure this out? Because I think that's the key to success, to be able to share with all these millennials so they can start looking at those types of things for themselves. What was yours?
Oh, okay. This is going to make people probably not like me as much, but appreciate where I've come from. I was in this class called Landmark Education, and I was a terrorist.
Oh, sure.
So yeah, you know, I think we talked briefly about Landmark.
Yes.
Now, here's the funny thing. It sounds like you might do triathlons. Have you ever done triathlons or Ironman?
I've been known to do a triathlon or two, yes.
Okay. So my husband back then, my boyfriend, this is just to give you a context of what sort of 22-year-old I was. My husband and I start dating. He's my boyfriend at the time, and it's like a Sunday morning, and he has his first triathlon. triathlon ever, right? Ever. And I've been out with my colleagues the night before and partying and having fun, and he wants me there at 6 a.m. to wish him luck as he goes into the swim. So what happens? I'm there at 6 a.m., begrudgingly, mind you, and a wee bit hungover, quite frankly. And I see my boyfriend at the time, and he got a haircut, but like one of those like bowl cuts. And so what do I say to him? I don't say to him, "Hey, baby, good luck. You're going to nail it." I was like, "Ew, what did you do with your hair?" So you know, we joke about the story now. We've been together 12 years. But in retrospect, I was just that person. Well, thank God, about a month later, I went and did this class called Landmark. And I'm sitting there, and people I know have been having extraordinary results, life-altering results. And what happens to me? I'm sitting there rolling my eyes like, oh my gosh, you guys are crazy. At one point, I even raised my hand, and I had a Von Bitch shirt on that basically said, "I'm a bitch." And when my instructor said, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "Yes. How would you respond to the fact that this is a cult?" And the instructor looks at me. He's like, "If it is a cult, it's the best damn cult you'll ever join." And I was furious. So I sat there just arms crossed, like not ignoring everybody. Meanwhile, people all around me, all this class, are getting breakthroughs. So fast forward to the Tuesday night when you complete this program. The woman who's the instructor comes over to me and says, "Are you going to do the advanced course?" And I look at her and I roll my eyes and I say in this exact tone, "Sweetheart, darling, it was stifling enough having sat in this room for the last 3 days. Do you really think I would put myself through this hell again?" She looks at my husband, boyfriend at the time, and he says, "Oh God, don't get me started. It took her 8 months just to do this one." And this is the moment where my life changed dramatically. And I'm sure you've helped many millennials in this moment too. And the instructor of the class said, "Can I be really straight with you?" And I kind of laughed and again rolled my eyes. I said, "Sure, darling, go ahead. You be really straight with me." And she looks me dead in the eye. And the first time in my entire life as an adult, somebody called me on my BS and my shit. And she said, "You are a nasty thing." She said, "You are like Godzilla walking through a city with a huge tail swinging behind you, knocking down buildings everywhere you go. Except look around you. Those aren't buildings. Those are people that you're destroying." She said, "You are one of the most powerful women I've ever met in my life, and you're using your powers to hurt people. You might want to think about that." And my jaw, after I was able to pick it up off the floor and go, "What is this woman talking about?" And I looked at my boyfriend at the time, and the look in his eyes said everything what she just said was true. And so I went out into the world and I went to my office where I was working and already relatively successful at that age. And I said, "Guys, have I ever been condescending or demeaning to any of you?" And the office went dead silent. 25 people, you could hear a pin drop. And then one person erupted in laughter and they said, "Jay Hill, you are only the most condescending, demeaning bitch we've ever met in our lives. And, you know, we don't even know how you're successful." And that, you know, totally changed my life. And now I do everything within my power to make sure we call it the red mist doesn't resurface, or the dark side, because we all have it. We all have the capacity for light and dark, good and bad, whatever you want to call it. And so I learned at a very young age that I really had the capacity to hurt people, which is not something you would ever want to intentionally do, but I didn't get the cost and impact. Does that answer your question?
Whoa!
That you weren't expecting
sure,
that answer.
That my question. No, I wasn't. I love that answer. And the challenge is most people don't have such a definite strength about them or power about them, yielded for good or for evil. And so sometimes the aha moments are not as strong, but that doesn't minimize that the aha moments are not critical. And I love what you shared. And what you shared is, someone called me on my stuff. They were bold because they cared enough to tell me the truth so they could help me, to empower me to use my power for good instead of evil. And I listened, or at least I thought there was a kernel there, and I went back and I explored it, and this is what I found out. And really, the truth is most people, and certainly most millennials, who have not had the practice to have been trained in these types of things, and we don't discuss it in high school, and we don't discuss it in college, and we don't discuss it in the workplace, the ability to have someone so prevalent and in your face and caring enough to tell you the truth is awesome. And really, you're right. That's what our business hopes to do, which is to allow people to be their best selves and create impact in a way that builds people up and makes them feel good about why they were put on this earth. And so I love that story. It's a fantastic story.
Well, thank you. And the funny thing is that you really shed a light for me on is, despite me having done, you know, what it's been 13 years now of transformational and developmental work, I've been sitting around teaching my own variation of classes about how to be empowered and empowering in the workplace, and yet I've had my share of podcasts and conversations with my clients, etc. Oh, those damn millennials, and I'm one of them, I'm on the cusp. Like, those millennials are unreliable, and those millennials, you know, they're only going to do what you ask them to do. And it, what really struck me in the same way that that woman, you know, 13 years ago made an impact on me, is that you said, what if you're looking for them to be entitled? Or what if, I don't want to put words in your mouth, what if you're perceiving them in that way, and so that's the only space they have to show up in, which ironically is what I teach in different classes, but it just went right over my head for the last 13 years about millennials until you said it. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. So I love that. Thank you. You kind of just gave me goosebumps, because that's really what it is about, which is, you know, what are you assuming, or what myths are you believing about any particular audience? And critically, what we're talking about now are millennials, which are such a critical generation, 83 million strong, 40% of the workforce today. They'll be 75% of the workforce in the next 10 years. They are our kids. They're our employees. And really, they're our customers now. They control over $660 billion worth of retail spend, which is growing to $1.5 trillion. And they're our future. And we got to get it right. And we got to get it right with them. And I think in one of the most, you know, infected political times of our lives, the second most hostile thing is millennials, and you can see it from all the spoofs on Saturday Night Live and all these things. And I think there are real reasons as to why we're at this point, but I don't think it matters. We complain about them. They complain about us being old and stuck in our own ways and only caring about money. And both are a little true. They may be entitled and spoiled and gotten a trophy for everything, or, you know, ask questions and all those things. But the truth is, most of the things they are and most of the things we are as human beings are positive things. And the question is, so what about all the negative? What are you going to do to address those people that work for you immediately? And what are you going to do to be their guide? Because the biggest thing about millennials are they're young. And youth is this amazing period, as you saw when you were 22, of being insular and self-focused and only focused on yourself. And it's just a condition of youth. We've been complaining about it since Socrates has been complaining about Plato. And it's not new news. And so our job as the older generation isn't to complain about it and belittle them and besmirch them and not want them or not teach them. Our job is to lean in and guide and be, you know, the work parents, if you will, or the work bosses. Or and you'll hear people say, well, I don't want to be a parent at work. And it's like, well, what's more rewarding than being a parent and growing someone to help them be the best they can be? What do you think would be more rewarding for your boss, for your work, to be a boss like that, that cares, has someone's back and develops them and guides them? Because truth is, even though they're super special and been given a seat at the table and think they can do anything, they have no friggin' clue how to do it, and we need to help them. It really is our duty. And so it's that simple. Yeah. It's that simple when you own a business, and it doesn't get more basic and primal as a human than how do I help those people? If I help people, everything will be better, from helping my customers to, you know, to being able to make an impact. And really, that's what we all want.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I remember so vividly, it was at the Levi's commercial that you showed during the speaking engagement. Is that who it was? Oh my gosh, that really hit me. Is I could see where I screwed up with any of the prior millennials I've mentored, worked with, recruited, my own sister, or, you know, just anybody I've come in contact with, is essentially in this commercial from Levi's, it's like, you are the one, you're the person, in what sort of stadium? It's like a six-story stadium.
You're the solo act of a sold-out show in a six-floor stadium. You're the king, you're the queen, you can do anything you want to be. You'll be president, you know. You're amazing, you're great, you're fantastic. And then at the end of the commercial, it's really? How? Yeah. Like, how? How am I going to do that? And you know, my message to the rest of the world is, they want to know how, and what the heck are you going to do to help them versus complaining about them? Because that's what it's all about. They need to know how. They want to do all those things. Yes, they've been told them, and it's not true without hard work, but how are you going to give them the opportunity to demonstrate that to you?
Yeah, I love that. It all goes back to putting the onus on you. It's about being accountable for other people's greatness as well as your own. And it's just, it's such an important place, I think, that we're at in society, that if we can actually...
I'm sorry, Jennifer, I lost you for a second.
Oh, it's okay. I was saying it's such an important thing for us to put the onus on ourselves. And what would it be like if society cared more about another's success than our own? What would that be like? Like if we looked in the workplace and we saw...
Yeah, I'm still having a time. Right now, maybe I can hear you better. Can you speak?
Okay, we're in the middle of a Verizon commercial, people. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me
okay,
now?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, so I was just saying about accountability, and I'm sure there's something I did that was accountable for that. I swear I've been like sending out a pulse this week to destroy all things electronic. But it's about just being accountable. And at the end of the day, what would it be like as human beings to look at other human beings and to have our success be dependent on how much they thrived or failed? That would be a whole different experience of being a human being, right?
Well, I think it's called being a parent.
I'm not lucky enough yet, but
I think that's kind of how we look at it. I am lucky enough, and I'm lucky enough to have my own millennials, some out of the home, one still in the home. But the real thing is my job there is to create the best people that will go create the best impact for the best world. And what can I do to help them do that? By teaching them everything I can about themselves, that God inside, so they can then make an impact on the rest of the world. And it's just so primal and basic, and I don't understand why we're so bad at it in the workplace. I mean, I do. I understand why we are, and I understand what we need to do to fix it, which is different, I think, than most people who speak about the millennial issue. Everyone's out there telling you what the issue is. That's great. We know what the issue is. We're not getting along. How do we fix it? That's what I want to focus on.
Focus on the solution, not the problem.
Absolutely.
Which is what everybody wants in the workplace. So speaking of which, let's talk about the right job versus the job, what was it, the right job right now? So talk to our listeners a little bit about the distinction between those two things.
Yeah, well, so I mean, you know, so much of the time when you get the honor and the opportunity to be able to coach people about themselves and figure out what that dot is inside so they can attract to the right job or the right dot, if you will. There's this little thing called eating and surviving that people like to do. And so there may not be the luxury to find the exact right job with the exact right people. And we make a distinction. There is the right job for you where you are in the world and what you want to be and the right boss and the right mentor, which sometimes takes a lot of work to get there. And then there's the right now job, which may be a job that puts you on the path to get there, to learn things about yourself, about what you really want, because as a young person, we don't teach that in college, so you don't know. So a lot of times the right now job can actually be the right job because it takes you to the right job. And I think there's just a distinction that needs to be made based on where you live, what your economic resources are, what you can do, what are the parameters relative to your education and all those things to really understand what is the right now job I need. Maybe I need more training. Maybe I need more mentorship or more learning or more experience with customers or more experience in sales before I exactly find the right job. And how do I pace myself into those things? And then how do I find them through networking or through resources or even online? How am I attracting to each of those types of jobs? And how do I really understand what I need to do? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think that people get so enmeshed in having to find their dream job as their first job that they pass up a great opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop into what could either grow them into the right long-term job, the perfect long-term job, or be the perfect stepping stone to get them in the right trajectory of where they want to go long-term.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even think young people coming out of college know what the right dream job is because most of them haven't really worked in a formal workplace. They've had part-time jobs. So it's super ironic, and very few people leave college these days knowing exactly what field they want to work in and what they want to do and exactly what they want to be a part of. And the other thing is that there's so many choices and there's so many different ways to work now. It's kind of not like your dad or mom when they graduated college that everyone went to work and you found a company and you worked there for 20 years. that's not what it's about anymore. And there's so much more. So I just wish we did a better job. I really got to put it to all the colleges and universities out there that I think are breaching their fiduciary duty to their students by not teaching them these types of things, and not at least having them, all these young, great, smart people, to be taught to have awareness around the issues that we're even having in this conversation. Well, you know, why don't you learn this from college? My son was fortunate enough to go to the great school of Boston College. Mm. And I don't think, maybe a few professors taught him this, but I don't think he learned this stuff in college. He learned them from home. And I don't know how many parents are that aware or keen and able to teach their kids, or will their kids even listen to them, right? Your own kids never listen to you, even mine. You know, I had to write a book so they would read it. Just kidding. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely right. I think it's a huge missing right now in society. And I know I went through the same obstacles as when I've told people this many times. I was planning to go to law school, and because of a clerical error, I had to put it off for a year. And I didn't even know what to do, where a job was. That's why I do several speaking engagements a year to, you know, college graduates and teach them, hey, here are the steps you need to take. Hey, here's what you need to do once you actually get that job. Hey, here's how to be empowered and empowering in the workplace. And, you know, this is stuff that you would hope is common sense, but I'm sure the classes you teach and I teach, it's stuff that we have to go out and teach it because nobody else is doing it, unfortunately, even though it might be common sense.
Or feel compelled. What do you think is the best advice you give them when you speak to them?
The best advice that I give them is be accountable in every situation. So instead of blaming your boss or blaming your colleague for not getting something done, to always have a perspective of how can I contribute to this, or how did I contribute to this working or not working? And I wish that even when I was younger than 22, that people had taught me that, is that everything in life has a direct correlation to what I did or didn't do. And if you can take accountability and ownership of all things, the good and the bad, it's not a blame thing or I feel sorry for myself, but it's true power. It's the greatest power that any mentor ever gave me, was teaching me that I'm accountable. That's it.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything you're saying about it all goes to, we have a bridge model, which it goes to own it, which is taking accountability. You can't change your boss,
right. So
change yourself.
Exactly.
And what can you do to change yourself? I do also believe that some of the things that we teach them about themselves and understanding their strengths and their values, their skills, their passions, their brand, their story of how to connect and how to frame it in a way that helps others is super, super critical. And of course, what you said about awareness is, how do I build a relationship with myself first and really get solid around that? Because the truth is, employers hire for positivity and for confidence and for, of course, for the skills. That's a no-brainer, but I'm assuming everyone has them. But they're really hiring for the who and the how. And we're just not spending enough time teaching that.
I just got present to something, Dan, that was really interesting in your speaking. I just got that even though a lot of this conversation and dialogue we've been having has been about millennials, it just really hit me that when I look at some of the baby boomers or Gen Xers in the workplace, they were never taught this either. I don't think it's just a millennial thing. I think that baby boomers were taught, you know, to go to work, put their nose to the grindstone, and one day hopefully retire with a gold watch. And I just am hearing the words that you're saying and the things that you're saying that you do in the bridging and so forth, and realizing that it's not just a millennial thing. I think it's a how to be a happy, fulfilled human being in the workplace thing. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, of course. Look, our book was actually written for managers of millennials and two managers of millennials. We can, look, both of us need to learn, and we need to learn the same thing, which is how are we our best selves and what are we going to create from our end of the spectrum? But every single thing that we teach millennials is exactly what the manager needs to learn. This is about building relationships. This is about figuring out who you want to be, what you want to create. And there are steps to do it. And you've talked about most of the steps. Busting myths is our bridge model. Busting myths is number one. Being real, deal, authentic, which is critical to this generation. That's our for our bridge acronym, owning it, I own it. And then D is about delivering value to other people, and G is about having aligned goals, and E is about empowering a culture and making sure you can do those things like that woman did for you at Landmark. And how do we keep on top of those things? So absolutely, you know, we're hired as much to train millennials to be their best as we are to train managers to be able to deal with millennials by being their best.
Yeah. And it, like you said, it all goes back. You can't change your boss. It doesn't matter if you're 20 years old entering the workforce or 65 and, you know, about to take your last job or whatever that might look like. The only person you're ever going to have control over is yourself. And so I think it's about, you know, one of your points that I know that you talk about is leveraging your strengths and delivering your story. What are some advice or what is some advice that you could give to our listeners about how to leverage their strengths so that no matter where they go, whether they're a millennial, baby boomer, et cetera, that they can really bring their core strengths and elevate those, whatever workplace they enter into?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the first thing you need to do to leverage your strengths is to understand them. So there are lots of different assessments, DISC, Myers-Briggs, 16PF, StrengthsFinder, which we love, to figure out what those strengths are, but to really explore who you are and what your strengths are. The interesting thing is about really starting to define your strengths and defining what your skills, your values, and passions are, but your skills in a way that they really help others, because it's about others and it's about the audience. And how do you start speaking in the language where it is about the audience, and the audience is the hero of your story and your strengths, and asking questions like, what can I do for you? How can I help you? All those types of things is really critical for millennials to learn. The other super important thing for all of us to learn, including millennials, and like I said, we do these workshops and we have people of all ages, is what holds you back? What's holding you back from being able to communicate those things simply, clearly, concisely, in a way that resonates with other people? And what is holding you back from that? And usually there are five main things or so that hold you back, and I don't know if I'm going to hit all five, but fear of failure, lack of confidence, feeling unworthy or not feeling good enough, a lack of clarity in what your purpose is or what you're doing. And the truth is, most people that are willing to take this on and discuss it are exceptional at what they do. And when they throw away all that negative bull and nonsense and you really take a look at how special they are, I can't tell you how many special people, from CEOs to millennials, we deal with that really are not super confident about how special they are. And so it's not only understanding your strengths and your skills, values, and passions and being able to explain them in a way that helps others, but it's really believing it, right? It's believing what that dot inside is. And what's it going to take you to believe it? And then the other thing is, once you do those two things, is get out there and exercise your muscles to do it. Whether you're online on the grocery store trying to meet someone, whether you're at the opera at a gala event that I was fortunate enough to be at, this week, or whether you are swimming in the pool or in the gym, whatever it is, what are you doing to connect and put yourself out there to help other people and have an experience that creates a relationship? That simple.
Yeah, I love what you just said too about overcoming your fears. I wish I knew exactly who it was, had this YouTube video. My husband happened to play it last night before we went to bed, and it was this young girl, and she had all these fears, all the things that were stopping her: fear of heights, fear of speaking, fear of everything. And it was so cute because I think her 100th fear was fear of speaking in public, and she did a TED talk on it and overcame that fear. And it's her transformation. It's just a quick little 1 minute video. I'm sure you can probably find it on YouTube, but she asked people to go out, and one fear a day, just go out. And it could be a small fear or a big fear, but I feel like as we each overcome our biggest fears, we become more and more ourselves, more and more authentic, and more empowered and courageous in the choices we make in business, personally, and professionally.
Well, I totally love that. And yeah, there are all these fears. And I mean, I can tell you that in law school, and I used to hate public speaking, and you heard me speak.
What?
And
now
I love it.
Possible.
I mean, I love it because it's about the audience. But I hated it so much in law school, I almost got a C when I was a straight A law school student on an assignment, because I was so nervous to speak in front of people. And so, you know, it's all these crazy things that we tell ourselves. and what are we going to do to change and shape and put ourselves out there? And there's nothing more rewarding than being involved in a mentor relationship where you see someone doing that and exercising those muscles. And again, things we're not teaching in college. Why is there not a mandatory public speaking course? Do you know that public speaking is the fear worse than death?
Wow.
I mean, it's shocking that we're not teaching that.
Yeah, and then you put somebody in a boardroom for the very first time, and God forbid that they have to do a presentation. It doesn't matter if they're 22 or 42 or 52. If you don't know how to own and be confident and speak in a way that has you be empowered, you're going to fall flat on your face and say, well, I'm never going to do that again, which is what a lot of us do as human beings. And then we wind up being faced with the same obstacles and situations over and over in our career. And then we never reach our full potential because we keep stopping ourselves just shy of what we're capable of.
Yeah. And there's such simple rules to presenting or to connecting with an audience. I think the rules of public speaking, the top three are, right, know your topic, be prepared,
yep.
Know your audience and understand them, so you better be able to ask great questions. Again, another skill that we don't teach enough. And then practice, practice, practice. And those three things are not that complicated. And so it's simple. And I think one of the challenges is we don't have enough mentors and guides going out there helping people and giving them a break. And then being honest, when someone comes up and bites it when they're presenting, we got to tell them that was not good.
You can't
tell them
that
was fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, they won't grow. Yeah. I always tell all of my clients whenever, no matter who I'm speaking with, I always say, you know, please give me the critical feedback. The positive feedback is great. It's always helpful to hear it. But to me, what's really going to make a difference in my speaking career or in anything I do, whether it's the podcast, and I always invite listeners to email in too, I want to know, how can I be extraordinary and reach that next level and improve further? And I think that's something as human beings we all want. We all want to get better. And that was something too that you touched on in your talk, is that if you're always blowing smoke up somebody's butt, pardon my French, and just saying, oh, you're fabulous, and you're not being authentic about the areas that they have room to grow in, that's what human beings really want. They want to grow. They want to be contributed to and to be able to take the next level. But that space isn't going to be there if you're always just fluffing them just to make them feel good, whoever they is.
Yeah. I look at it as the challenger method of sales or coaching. It's, if you really want to bring value to people, you have to tell them the truth. So, for example, this morning, I was super fortunate enough to be hosted by a wonderful man who wants to figure out how to attract millennials to a club in downtown San Diego. Wonderful, wonderful man. I really enjoyed meeting him. All he wanted to do was learn. And so at the end of the meeting, I said, what can I do to help you? And what he said to me was, I don't know, just kind of think of us. And if you can get back to me and provide me information, that'd be great. And I was like, think of you or send you things, that's not, do I have permission to coach you? And he said, yeah. And I was wondering, you know, this guy was so nice, do I go in and am I honest? And I said, you're not giving me enough to help you. Mm-hmm. I'm a super busy guy. I don't know what that means, give you more information. I don't know what the next step is. Here are four of the five of the things that I can do, but I need you to really figure out what you're asking me to do to help you, because I want to help you. But I don't know what that means. It's so general.
Yeah.
So, for example, think of me or provide me more information. And at that very moment, I had to decide, is Dan going to be bold enough to tell him that you're not serving me, or I don't understand what you're asking me for, or I can't provide you value with that description, so you're going to need to do better? Or does Dan say, okay, sure, if I think of anything, I'll let you know? And of course, you've met me now for, you know, one speech and another 30 minutes or 40 minutes. So, you know, I told him permission to coach. Hey, dude, ask for what you want, right? Just like all you millennials out there, ask for what you want. Otherwise, you're not going to get it. Now, I'm not saying ask for everything. Like when I did one speech, millennial stands up and says, how do I get paid what I'm worth? That's not a great question to ask for. More importantly is maybe the question to me is, Dan, How do I demonstrate my worth so I can get paid my value?
Mm.
That's a better question. And then you can ask your boss that too, your prospective boss, but don't really figure out how you're communicating and what you want and what you're asking for. What you're asking for people to help you with, because most people will want to help. They just need more help in figuring out what that is to you.
I think that's a great piece of advice for any of our listeners out there, is don't be afraid to ask for critical feedback. And again, some managers you have to keep in mind might not have done Dan's class and read Dan's book and have a context of how to give empowering feedback. And the one thing I would encourage our listeners to do is just don't take it personally. If you can actually ask and be open enough to hear feedback, regardless of whether or not that person is adept in delivering the feedback in a tactful way, really look for it of what is the lesson I'm asking to learn here and how can I apply this in my life, no matter what form it comes in, because it might not always come in a really peachy, lovely, hey, you know, how do you feel about receiving this feedback? And so I invite our listeners to really, you know, be open and not take it personally. Great concept from, you know, Dan, I believe it's the Four Agreements, Dan Miguel Ruiz's
book. Yeah, the Four Agreements. I love that. From Don Miguel Ruiz.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a great concept, and we really need to be not taking things personally, but we also need to learn. Millennials ask me all the time, hey Dan, I have this job and my boss is X, Y, and Z, should I bounce? First of all, I had to learn what bounce meant, but guys, now I know what bounce means, which means leave.
Yeah.
And the problem is 71% of millennials are disengaged in the workplace, and 50% of them think they're going to have a new job in the next year, as attributed to Gallup. So it's a big, big problem out there. But the question is, what are you quitting? And what do you have left to learn before you quit? Mm. And are you asking yourself the right questions? And so millennials, we have a lot to learn. And so I wouldn't suggest you bounce until you've learned everything you can learn in that particular job, because the job you have is much easier to learn than the job you need to go to and prove yourself at. And we should also be asking ourselves, what do I have left to learn here? And what am I willing to ask for? And how can I ask for it? Millennials need to be trained too, and managers themselves, is how we do communicate. As you said, most people won't say it in the right way. The question is, how are you going to receive it as the millennial or the manager? Which is, maybe you never respond and you just, with a statement, and you just respond with, help me understand what you mean about that comment, because I really am trying to figure out how I can be better.
Yeah, the best.
Or help me understand, yeah, you know, something like that.
I was going to say, the best coaching I ever got from my own business coach whenever I'm faced with any sort of obstacle in my career is get curious, ask questions, instead of reacting and being like, what do you mean by that? You know, which is what so many of us do, is we just like get our feathers ruffled. Instead, just say, you know, I'm really curious. I want to get further clarification. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? And when you get curious, it creates a whole new element and opening for conversation and dialogue that wasn't there before, that's going to be much more proactive than reactive.
Oh, yeah. And there's, you know, we do this whole section called the power of the question. It's not only getting curious, which I love that your coach gave you that advice, which is, I mean, who doesn't love curious people that are interested? I mean, they're super attractive. The thing is how are you going to get curious and what questions are you going to ask? Questions are so powerful. So don't leave it to ask open-ended yes-no questions. Mm. Ask questions that matter and that are going to make a difference and that show you listened and showed you listened carefully and that you want to solve and that you're grateful. And so it's not only the curious nature of it, it's what you're asking and how you're asking. And millennials, if you want to assert all that great knowledge and power and information you have, then focus on asking dang great questions. Make sure the second question is better than the first, but they should be open-ended and probative and super curious and fact-finding. But it's great advice, Jennifer, and your coach. Spot on.
Well, thank you. Well, Dan, you have had some amazing, extraordinary advice for our listeners today. I'm so happy that we met a couple weeks ago and I had the privilege to hear you speak. So in case there are any listeners out there that A, would love to hire you to come into their corporations, or millennials who would love to attend one of your workshops, where would people find more information about you?
Yeah, our book is available at chasingrelevance.com. And also our own corporate website, which is www.launchbox, L-A-U-N-C-H-B-O-X, 365, as in 365 days of the year, .com. So www.launchbox365.com. You'll find our speaking topics. You'll find our peer-to-peer networking groups, our coaching seminars, and, you know, all we want, and soon to be a cool app that will be on-demand coaching. But we're super excited and grateful for all the amazing clients and experiences we get to have, and love to help people.
Awesome. So again, this has been Dan Negroni, who is a speaker, author, obviously inspiration, extraordinary man. You can always find any of the archives of the show on LA Talk Radio's website, or in case you want to download it and listen later, iTunes.com under Get Yourself the Job in the podcast section. You can download, subscribe, listen for free at your leisure. And do join us next week with Dave Roberts, who's going to tell you how to be successfully unemployed for the rest of your career. So that should be an interesting topic as well. And thank you again for being on the show today, Dan.
Thank you, Jennifer. Pleasure.
All right, everybody. Have a great week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.